Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. One of the things that makes me happy is listening to and reading Viktor Frankl stuff. So when I was talking about it yesterday, I had a couple people say, "Hey, would you share some of the stuff that you like?" And I said, "I thought so because of my back, I haven't been doing a whole lot, right? So I've been listening to books." So that's how I've been spending my time. So let me share a few cuts. There might be four of them. Might be five. But let me... Bring me down. Can't run. Bring me down. Your love is too high. Bring me down. Pharrell Williams. He's a pretty cool dude. Always wearing a hat. Viktor Frankl makes me. It took me years to be able to do stuff like that. All right, enough of that. Okay, so let me tell you what you're going to hear. This is from a book entitled The Unheard Cry for Meaning. And so Frankl... He grows up in Austria. He's an exceptional intellect, very young. He's writing letters to Sigmund Freud when he's a teenager. And so he goes to work as a volunteer, I believe at the University of Vienna, and he starts working with people with mental health issues because he wants to help people. He decides at the age of 3 that he wants to be a doctor. Yeah. How crazy is that? So anyway, he writes Man's Search for Meaning after he spends, 3 years in German, in 4 different German concentration camps, and survives. Nobody else in his family survives. So he writes Man's Search for Meaning. And he creates this school of therapy called logotherapy. Logo is a Greek word for meaning. So anyway... what I found, partly with the help of Josh Goldberg, who introduced me to Dr. Frankl, but, you know, on my own, right, the emphasis, what makes post-traumatic winning different is its absolute emphasis on giving, okay, on giving. That, yeah, you can grow from these bad events, and that's all great, okay. But what makes post-traumatic winning different is it's saying, look, do you want to take your life and make it a great life? Do you want to turn trauma into joy? Do you? Look at me when I say that. Do you want to do that? Yes. All right. Then the way to do that is by giving. You've got to give. And which makes sense in this life of service that those of us who serve gravitate towards. So, anyhow, let me tell you what the first quote is. The first quote is, and Josh uses a part of this when he speaks, and that's where I first heard it. But Frankl's talking about freedom, right? and freedom in life and all the different issues that it causes. Okay, and so the first part of this quote is, and you'll hear a beep, and then I'll stop it, and then we'll keep going. So here's Frankl talking about freedom.
Freedom is part of the story and half of the truth. Being free is but the negative aspect of the whole phenomenon whose positive aspect is being responsible. Freedom may degenerate into mere arbitrariness unless it is lived in terms of responsibleness. That is why I would recommend that the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast be supplemented by a Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast.
How cool is that, right? That, you know, we tend to talk about freedom, you know, is only, is part of the problem and half of the story, or whatever he said, you know, but freedom constantly counterbalanced by responsibility is the key, right? It's not that you're free, it's that you're free and you're responsible. And those two things together, right, make for a great life. Here's the second clip I want to say. He talks about, and so Frankl gets into this discussion or into this debate as he kind of expounds this philosophy of logotherapy, this therapy based on man's search for meaning, man's need to find meaning, and what happens in the absence of that meaning, okay? And so he's constantly in this, it seems like, discussion with, I think, Freud's school that says, you know, you're an animal, you know, and your issues come out of the animal tendencies, as well as your relationship problems with your father, your mother when you were a kid. Right? So if I can loosely define that as Freud's school, Frankl says, To all of that, Frankl says, yeah, that's all part of life. I understand that. We are biological animals, but man is different. So listen to this next cut. Pretty interesting. He talks about, as a professor in two fields, but a survivor of four Nazi concentration camps. So listen to this.
There is indeed what is called the wisdom of the heart. Or one may call it the ontological self-understanding, a phenomenological analysis of the way in which the man in is all too human. Human freedom is finite freedom. Man is not free from conditions, but he is free to take a stand in regard to them. The conditions do not completely condition him. Within limits, it is up to him whether or not he succumbs and surrenders to the conditions. He may as well rise above them and by so doing open up and enter the human dimension. As I once put it, as a professor in two fields, neurology and psychiatry, I am fully aware of the extent to which man is subject to biological, psychological, and sociological conditions. But in addition to being a professor in two fields, I am a survivor of four camps. Concentration camps, that is. And as such, I also bear witness to the unexpected extent to which man is capable of defying and braving even the worst conditions conceivable. Sigmund Freud once said, "Let us attempt to expose a number of the most diverse people uniformly to hunger. With the increase of the imperative urge of hunger, all individual differences will blur, and in their stead will appear the uniform expression of the one unstilled urge." In the concentration camps, however, the reverse was true. People became more diverse. The beast was unmasked, and so was the saint. The hunger was the same, but people were different. In truth, calories do not count. Ultimately, man is not subject to the conditions that confront him. Rather, these conditions are subject to his decision. Wittingly, or unwittingly, he decides whether he will face up or give in, whether or not he will let himself be determined by the conditions. Of course, it could be objected that such decisions are themselves determined, but it is obvious that this results in a regressus in infinitum, A statement by Magda B. Arnold epitomizes this state of affairs and lends itself as an apt conclusion of the discussion. All choices are caused, but they are caused by the chooser.
Now, I know this is some heavy stuff, okay? So don't start to, like, Mac, my brain just fell out of my ear. What the hell? No, think about that, right? He talks about, he understands that, you know, that man is an animal subject to the human condition, but man is different, and that the root of all of our problems are our choices. Some of the most interesting stuff that he talks about are letters that he receives, in particular from prisoners who've discovered either through him coming to, by coming and speaking at a prison or by reading, that the way that this stuff changes their life. All right? So, listen to this.
In conclusion, let me quote from two more letters I received. One from Frank E., who was number 020640 in an American state prison. I have found true meaning in my existence even here in prison. I find purpose in my life, and this time I have left is just a short wait for the opportunity to do better and to do more. And from another prisoner, number 552022. Dear Dr. Frankel, during the past several months, a group of inmates have been sharing your books and your tapes. Yes, one of the greatest meanings we can be privileged to experience is suffering. I have just begun to live, and what a glorious feeling it is. I am constantly humbled by the tears of my brothers in our group when they can see that they are even now achieving meanings they never thought possible. The changes are truly miraculous. Lives which heretofore have been hopeless and helpless now have meaning. Here in Florida's maximum security prison, some 500 yards from the electric chair, we are actualizing our dreams. It is near Christmas, but logotherapy was my Easter morning. Out of the Calvary of Auschwitz has come our Easter sunrise. From the barbed wire and chimney of Auschwitz rises the sun. My, what a new day must be in store. Sincerely, Greg B. I thank Greg for this letter, which I treasure because it is more than just a letter. I rather see therein a document humain, a document of humanness.
Heavy shit, right? Yeah. I mean, so, and you talk about, so that you could see this void of meaning that Frankel talks about, especially with modern society. No longer do we have to band together to protect each other. No longer we have people that do that professionally. No longer do we have to band together to grow our food. We have people that do that. We just go to the market. You know, we have more and more leisure time. And without meaning in your life, right? People adrift with so much time, right, to quote-unquote find themselves, right, to find themselves. No, I find it awesome. Now, this is him, I think he's talking about comments about prisoners, and specifically about prisoners of the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam.
In an extreme life situation, such as Auschwitz, and even in the face of one's death in a gas chamber, may, from unimaginable suffering, spring forth a growing awareness of life's unconditional meaningfulness. The same conclusion has since been reached by other authors of books on concentration camps, and also by psychiatric investigations concerning Japanese, North Korean, and North Vietnamese prisoner of war camps. When I once had, as students, three American officers who had served long terms, up to 7 years, in North Vietnamese POW camps, they too had found that the prisoners who felt there was something or someone waiting for them were the ones most likely to survive. The message, the legacy, is that survival depended on the direction to a what for, or a whom for, In a word, existence was dependent on self-transcendence, a concept that I introduced into logotherapy as early as 1949. I thereby understand the primordial anthropological fact that being human is being always directed and pointing to something or someone other than oneself, to a meaning to fulfill or another human being to encounter, a cause to serve or a person to love. Only to the extent that someone is living out this self-transcendence of human existence, is he truly human, or does he become his true self? He becomes so, not by concerning himself with his self's actualization, but by forgetting himself and giving himself, overlooking himself and focusing outward. Consider the eye, an analogy I am fond of invoking. When, apart from looking in the mirror, does the eye see anything of itself? An eye with a cataract may see something like a cloud, which is its cataract. An eye with glaucoma may see its glaucoma as a rainbow halo around the lights. A healthy eye sees nothing of itself. It is self-transcendent. What is called self-actualization is, and must remain, the unintended effect of self-transcendence. It is ruinous and self-defeating to make it the target of intention. And what is true of self-actualization also holds for identity and happiness. It is the very pursuit of happiness that obviates happiness. The more we make it a target, the more widely we miss.
Trying to be happy. Right, what's the key to happiness? The key to happiness is giving, right? It's giving. If you give in your life, then guess what happens? Right, you get happy, right? The more you try to find happiness, it ain't out there, at least my experience. Good luck with that. But start giving of yourself, and then watch what happens to your life. Crazy, right? Is it that simple? Well, Frankl thinks that it is.
The dream that if we just improve the socioeconomic situation of people, everything will be okay. People will become happy. The truth is that as the struggle for survival has subsided, the question has emerged, survival for what? Ever more people today have the means to live, but no meaning to live for. There is a parallel to this state of affairs on the ontogenetic rather than the phylogenetic level. As a former teaching assistant of mine at Harvard University could show, among graduates of that university who went on to lead quite successful, ostensibly happy lives, a huge percentage complained of a deep sense of futility, asking themselves what all their success had been for. Does this not suggest that what today is so often referred to as midlife crisis is basically a crisis of meaning? On the other hand, we see people being happy under adverse, even dire conditions. Let me quote from a letter I received from Cleve W., who wrote it when he was number 049246 in an American state prison. Here in prison, there are more and more blissful opportunities to serve and grow. I'm really happier now than I've ever been. Notice, happier than ever, in prison. Or let me take up a letter that I recently received from a Danish family doctor. For half a year, my very dear father was seriously ill with cancer. The last 3 months of his life, he lived in my house, looked after by my beloved wife and myself. What I really want to tell you is that those 3 months were the most blessed time in the lives of my wife and me. Being a doctor and a nurse, of course, we had the resources to cope with everything, but I shall never in my life forget all the evenings when I read him sentences from your book. He knew for 3 months that his illness was fatal, but he never gave a complaint. Until his last evening, I kept telling him how happy we were that we could experience this close contact for those last weeks, and how poor we would have been if he had just died from a heart attack, lasting a few seconds. Now I have not only read about these things, I have experienced them, so I can only hope that I shall be able to meet fate the same way my father did. Again, Someone is happy in the face of tragedy and in spite of suffering, but in view of meaning. Truly, there is a healing force in meaning.
Again, the book is entitled A Crisis of Meaning. Now, I know it's heavy stuff, all right, bear with me. There's a couple more of these things I want to hear, because you hear these letters from prison. You hear what POWs say, right? People in the worst circumstances talking about how they found purpose and meaning in their life. I mean, it's amazing. And then contrast it with people that have everything the world has to offer but are so unhappy. Like, how does that work? Right? How does that work? Here's another one. I think.
It had been overlooked or forgotten that if a person has found the meaning sought for, he is prepared to suffer, to offer sacrifices even, if need be, to give his life for the sake of it. Contrarywise, if there is no meaning, he is inclined to take his life, and he is prepared to do so even if all his needs, to all appearances, have been satisfied. All this was brought home to me by the following report, which I received from a former student of mine. At an American university, 60 students who had attempted suicide were screened afterward, and 85% said the reason had been that life seemed meaningless. Most important, however, 93% of these students suffering from the apparent meaninglessness of life were actively engaged socially, were performing well academically, and were on good terms with their family groups. What we have here, I would say, is an unheard cry for meaning, and it certainly is not limited to only one university. Consider the staggering suicide rates among American college students, second only to traffic accidents as the most frequent cause of death.
We all have the...
And that, Frankl's doing that, and he's writing that in the 70s, right? All those numbers have all continued. I want to play something that he quotes the Prime Minister of Australia, who talks about, of Austria, talks about the meaning of life. So listen to this. I hope the bookmark's right, because I edited the other ones. This one, I'm just going to go straight to it. So we'll see.
Unemployment may cause a specific neurosis, unemployment neurosis, as I called it when I first described it in 1933. But again, upon closer investigation, it turned out that the real cause was the confusion of one's being unemployed with his being useless, and hence his life's being meaningless. Financial compensation, or for that matter, social security, is not enough. Man does not live by welfare alone. Take the typical welfare state of Austria, which...
How about that quote? Man does not live by welfare alone, which is an interesting quote, right? Given all the different welfare programs that we see and how they seem to entrench people where they're at.
Is blessed with social security and is not plagued by unemployment. And yet, in an interview, our Chancellor Bruno Kreisky expressed his concern about the psychological conditions of the citizens, saying that what is most important and urgent today is to counteract the feeling that life is meaningless. The feeling of meaninglessness, the existential vacuum, is increasing and spreading to the extent that, in truth, it may be called a mass neurosis. There is ample evidence in the form of publications in professional journals to indicate that it is not confined to capitalist states, but can also be observed in communist countries. It makes itself noticeable even in the Third World. This brings up the question of its etiology and symptoms. As to the former, let me offer you this brief explanation. Unlike other animals, man is not told by drives and instincts what he must do, and unlike man in former times, he is no longer told by traditions and traditional values what he should do. Now, Lacking these directives, he sometimes does not know what he wants to do. The result? Either he does what other people do, which is conformism, or he does what other people want him to do, which is totalitarianism. James C. Crumbaugh, Leonard T. Mihalik, Elizabeth S. Luke.
So you can see, it's cool stuff to read. It's cool stuff, and it all goes back to finding meaning in life. You want to make yourself happy, right? You want to make yourself happy? Guess what you need to do? You need to go volunteer. Give of yourself. I always talk about how cool it is, how great a time you have. Yeah, you want to be happy? Go volunteer. Go give of yourself. And then slowly but surely, make that more and more a part of your life. Give. Yeah. And all those stories, all those things he says that are instances of people that are giving, you know, to other people, which is, you know, which is very, very interesting. But what I don't understand is, like, I'm a dope like everybody else. Like, is this that hard to figure out? How do you lose your way? Right? And you have no purpose in life. Right? So we're willing to treat all these other symptoms of the lack of purpose, but not, I don't know, that's what it seems like to me. All these programs want to do all these other things for you, except correct that which is fundamentally wrong. I don't find purpose. I don't get out of bed and love what I do. And as a result, I'm unhappy. Right. How many times is the word I used in all of that? Way too many. All right. You have your walking. You have your instruction for the day. No, I would recommend kind of investigating that stuff. I just take my reading where it takes me, and just follow the stuff that you're interested in, right? Follow the stuff you're interested in. So anyway, with that said, don't touch that dial. Pretty interesting program today. Joey Perrazzo joined us in the first hour. Joey now an F-18 as a civilian contractor instructor after getting out of the Marine Corps as a major as an F-18 pilot. Call sign of chick. But he came on and explained some of the stuff that we'd read about in the two reports that I've seen about the F-18 KC-130J crash last December off the coast of Japan. And, you know, and the conversation, you know, how is the squadron organized? You know, who flies at night? How does that work? Right? What is the responsibility of the lead? Can you explain tanking to us? Can you explain qualifications to us? Can somebody just sign off on stuff arbitrarily? So, anyhow, he did all that. And so I want to thank Joey again for coming on and doing that. Because most guys wave off that. Mac, I'd rather not, really. But doing a lot of explaining, so appreciate that. So that, and as you'll hear him say, the investigation, a different part of the investigation is ongoing, and that is, will there be anything punitive that happens to anybody that's involved in it? My instinct is that is that there will be. That's my instinct. So we'll see. Anyway. Have a great day on a Tuesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.